Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of January 2021. Welcome to episode 68 of this podcast series, aka Self-Quarantine Journal number 11. The concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comics I've read since the last time we had one of these brief chats, although with 5 Saturdays in January and still working from home, it might not be all that brief. Nonetheless, this is pretty much the books I read during January. These are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost that on my Facebook and Twitter feeds, so you can find those. But those posts are not exactly spoilers for the podcast, since those are just lists. And here, we have a little bit of review, a little bit of critique, a little conversation. But first, we have a little bit of feedback. On the December episode, we heard from faithful Feedbacker Podcasting's Michael Bailey. Professor Allen, the fact that I mostly listen to you while settling the tills at the end of the day here at work feels right. Anyway, an enjoyable episode. I had a very snarky reaction to the Mark Guggenheim image book you talked about. You said something to the effect that it's a world where Lex Luthor wipes out all crime and shows up the heroes, and I said out loud to no one, "Are we sure Geoff Johns didn't write this? That seems to be in his wheelhouse." Which led me to think about how I tracked down the term wheelhouse, where that came from, and it's a baseball term, and then I got called to the front of the store for something. It's been a weird year, but it's been a pleasure listening to your shows. They provided brief respites to everything that's going on. Take care. Looking forward to what you release in 2021. Podcasting's Michael Bailey. Well, thank you, Mike. It has been a pleasure to listen to your shows and to receive your feedback. Dr. Ange wrote in to say that he smiled widely when I mentioned the Secret Society of Supervillains. As you may know, I am a huge Creeper fan. Yes, Ange. We know. We all know. I was introduced to him in Secret Society 9. It was there, seeing him crouched in the rain, willing to go to the belly of the beast, that I recognized his greatness. A perfect read. I know you say you rarely hold on to the issues you cover on the show, but this one is a creeper keeper. Okay, Ange, but I think I'll save the phrase creeper keeper for one of next October's horror reads. Michael T. Geist said it was an excellent episode. I was amazed at the number of comics you read this past year. I did not read anywhere close to the number I thought I would at the beginning of 2020, but I always had your podcasts to keep me entertained. Inspired, I'm starting this new year with a new comics reading goal in mind. Nothing close to your numbers, but hopefully attainable with my busy days. Happy 2021 to the whole relatively geeky family. Thank you, Michael T. And I'm sure that there's no way that I'll read as many comics in 2021 that I did in 2020. That was just ridiculous. Both Sir Martin and Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, said that they were going to wait until the new year to listen to that episode, which was released late on New Year's Eve. So I won't take offense to that. Martin followed up, confirming that he was the listener who is annoyed by signatures in the middle of comics. It's real art on board, rather than work created on a screen. Why not sign it after it's been returned by the publisher? If it's digital, sign it after it's printed out. There's obviously some selling on advantage for the artist, but it's to the detriment of the reader, interrupting the storyline with commerce. Boo to artists who do this. Agreed, Mart. Agreed. And Sir Luke had some comments as well. Professor, wow, the last 12 months, they sure felt more like 365 days, am I right? Despite Being primarily homebound since the end of March, I do not think that my comics reading increased dramatically. Being at home all day with my 4 school-aged children. Yes, Luke, that makes all the difference in the world. He says that does make it harder to squirrel myself away with a comic. My new comics reading has ebbed and flowed this year. While Marvel gave me lots of content for Iron Man and Venom, as well as a new Ultraman miniseries, DC ended the fantastic volume of Hawkman, and Flash lost its longtime writer Josh Williamson. The lack of comics, shows, and cons not only meant less cheap comics for me to read, which, as we all know, are the best kind of comics, but also made it harder to find gifts for my brother and father, as I often rely on unique and creative items at SC Comic Con or Heroes Con. Hopefully, we can get back to having conventions this year. Fingers crossed, buddy. Fingers crossed. I'm always glad to hear about your seasonal reading for December, as I too am a sucker for Christmas and other holiday comics. 2 new ones which I enjoyed this year were comedy books from the good folks at American Mythology. Laurel and Hardy, Christmas Follies, and of course, I sent a copy of this one to your reigning and defending listeners of the year. I hope the Sutherlands enjoy that. And The Three Stooges, Stoogemas. Plenty of good-natured holiday laughs in these 2 comics. Looking forward, I have a couple comics reading projects I am to accomplish in 2021. First up is reading all of Dave Sims' Cerebus. Back in 2011, at my local LCS Borderlands, always creatively named Big Annual Sale, I managed to find 11 of the phone book style collections of Cerebus for $1 each. Actual retail of all of those collections would be close to $200. Even paying full price for some of the volumes, I came out pretty far ahead on that one. I have read a few volumes of the series since, but not the whole thing. At 300 issues and 6,000 pages, I suppose this will take a good portion of the year. Just to clarify, Luke did say $1 per phone book style compilation. Wow, buddy, that is impressive. I also am going to try to finish my collection of Marvel Classics comics, Marvel's take on Classics Illustrated, of which I'm missing a handful of issues, and of course, seasonal genre reading. Keep up the good work in 2021. Here's hoping next year's CRJ Year in Review is capping off a better year for us all, Luke. I have thoroughly enjoyed finding new monthly seasonal reading to engage in, and in concert with Luke and some others for 2021, we will be doing Western comics in July and romance comics in February. And thanks to Sean Urbanski for including this network in a short list of shows that he thanked for a year of wonderful podcasts. Thanks for getting us through this long year. You're welcome, Sean. Kind words from listeners like that are a huge reason why we keep doing this after all these years. Social media support for last episode came from Randy Watts, Pat from the Long Box Crusade, Vic in Phoenix, Chris Lydon, Karen from Between the Pages, James from Karen, Jason from Hawaii, John Smith, Drew from Comics for Fun and Profit, Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, Billy D from the brand new All-Star Squadron podcast, A World on Fire, Chris Willett, Paul from the Collected Edition, Manuel Carmone of Truthful Comics, Bill from the Bat Pod, Dr. Ange, Sir Luke, John 39263, Laurel Mountainflower 1 from the Hunters podcast, and the Sutherlands from the Rad Adventures Network. And now, on to the books I read last month. As we do over here, I'm going to categorize the books that I read, and first are the issues specifically related to podcast appearances, the homework books. For Quarterman 163, I read Spider-Man Magazine number 1, which reprints 3 issues of Amazing, and the classic holiday-themed Marvel Team-Up number 1. And for Quarterman 164, I read a fun Team-Up story in Brave and the Bold 130, and right after that, to put it into context, I read the issue before Brave and the Bold 129. And for the latest episode of Doom Speak, I read Doctor Doom number 10, in which the whole series comes to a, spoilers, interesting and appropriate end. In comics, I read for listening to podcasts, and there are more of these than ever before, it seems, because DC Universe app. And the fact that I love following along with comic book podcasts, if I have the chance, in the app, certainly gives me more opportunities to have that chance. So to listen along with episode 46 of the Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace podcast, hosted by Angela, I went very old school and read Wonder Woman Volume 1, Number 9 from all the way back in 1940, a novel-length story that features the origin of Giganta. And I'll listen along with a bandwagon-jumping episode of Back to the Bins. I read Wonder Woman 232 and 241 from the Bronze Age, and also Wonder Woman 9, this one, from the George Perez run. And then listen along with Shag. On episode 37 of the Justice League Wahaha podcast, I read Justice League Europe 13, featuring as a guest star one of my all-time favorite DC characters, an orange stray cat. And then listen along with episode 90 of the Legion Clubhouse I read, Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes 236, containing a trio of stories of Legionnaires on vacation. And to follow along with Batman, Nightcast 34, read Detective Comics 400, the excellent story in which Man-Bat debuted, and Batman 452, the start of Dark Knight, Dark City. And for listening, along with an old Christmas episode of Rob Meyer's podcast, Everyone Loves the Drake, I read Detective Comics 826, a harrowing Christmas story by Paul Dini. And to follow along with the brand new All-Star Squadron podcast, A World on Fire, hosted by Billy D. and Herman, I read All-Star Squadron number 1. And for listening along with Tim Price, the Podcrasher, on his new Outcaster show that he does with Ashford, episode 5, I read Batman and the Outsiders 5. And to listen along with Laurel, a.k.a. Mountain Flower, and her crew, on episode 44 of the Huntress podcast, I read a dramatic Justice Society story from Adventure Comics 463, in which, in the aftermath of Bruce Wayne's death, Dr. Fate rewrites a whole lot of reality to keep Dick Grayson's and Helena Wayne's secret identities secret. And on to new comics that we read right off the shelves, and we do have one. Going forward, there will be months when we won't have any at all. But in January, that was King in Black, Iron Man / Doom. Should have been Doom / Iron Man, but we're not really here to quibble, are we? Now, I think that this issue is Christopher Cantwell's transition book between his run writing Doctor Doom and his upcoming run on Iron Man. And as for the issue itself, well, it was one of the strangest Christmas stories ever. And I did catch up on a series that I dropped from the pull list a year or so ago by reading Wonder Woman 75 through 83 and Annual 3. There was a lot of Cheetah in here, and not just the Year of the Villain issues. And I wonder if these were originally intended to be released in accordance to one of the many earlier release dates for WW84. I did like a lot of this, including the storyline where Aphrodite is killed, and with her, all of love across the world dies, which is a pretty cool concept, and I liked the way it was executed. The relationship between Steve and Diana was strained before the worldwide loss of love, and the events of those issues does, at least temporarily, send them off in different directions. These were pretty good issues overall. Glad I dipped back in to check these out. The annual was a tie-in to Event Leviathan, as most of it was a battle with Gorilla Grodd, which is always good. And on to the general comic reading that I did, wrapping up an Alterna series that I started last year. I read Gods and Gears 3 and 4. First, this series has super smart talking monkeys, so how could it go wrong? Now, over the entirety of the four issues, there were some bits I just didn't totally get, but more often than not, this worked. Did I mention the super smart talking monkeys? Because that always helps any story. Now, last month, when we talked about the year in review, I mentioned that I had read a ton of Spider-Man in 2020, and so far, it does not seem that 2021 will be any different. From the dime sale at World's Greatest Comics, I picked up a Spider-Man Classics reprint of Green Goblin's first appearance. From Amazing Spider-Man 14, from Lee and Ditko. It also has a pretty good Spidey versus Hulk fight in it, so obviously a lot happens in this very solid issue. Then jumping up more than three decades, we got Amazing Spider-Man 479, although it was also numbered number 38 because Marvel. This is from the JMS run. This one is where Spidey and Aunt May share their secrets with each other, and we learn how each one blames themselves for Ben's death. It's a good moment. They understand each other. But like any relationship, and this is one of JMS's strengths as a writer, it's not all peachy keen at the end. Each one needs some time to process and see where it's all going to go next. And sticking with Spidey, I read a book sent in recently by Jeremiah Jones Goldstein, the notorious JJG, from comicscomicscomics.blog. This was Marvel Tales 45 with Spidey and Medusa, just adding to Peter's redhead problems. Medusa comes to New York to be with normal humans, but is discovered by an advertising man who wants her to promote his hair care products. So, yeah, that does not go well. She and Spidey fight, then talk, then reconcile. So standard stuff, but pretty well done and quite enjoyable. And Dr. Ange sent Marvel Team Up 43 with Spidey teaming up with Dr. Doom and Mr. and Mrs. Scarlet Witch as well. This is from the storyline where they get sent back to the Salem witch trial days. And of course, if you read between the lines, you see that Doom is the real hero of this entire situation, because, of course, he is. Now, speaking of the good doctor, I've mentioned in previous issues that I bet on sports with a couple of my buddies, Dr. Ange and Sir Luke, always with the most valuable items at stake, comic books. And here in early 2021, let's just say things are really coming up, Professor Allen. The Cleveland Browns, having won more games than the New England Patriots for the first time in, I'm going with forever, brought me some books from Boston, from the good doctor, including one of his favorite, maybe his actual favorite, Supergirl issue ever, Supergirl 9 from the Peter David run, and it is really good, with Gary Frank art, and as weird as this sounds, really good lettering. Overall, it was dramatic, emotional, and it had angels and demons in it, so what wouldn't I love? And Clandestine number 1 from the heart of the 90s. You know how I knew it was from the heart of the 90s without even checking the indicia? Because the cover was cardstock, and still shiny 26 or 27 years later. I don't mind the shiny, I guess, but I'm not a big fan of the heavy card covers. Because at this point in my life, just about all I want to do with my comics is read them. That's all. And a cover that doesn't fold very easily makes for a comic that's kind of difficult to hold casually, maybe with one hand, and thus it's a little difficult for me to read, you know, casually, which is my preferred method of reading, casual. So this comic got off to a tough start for me. The content of the issue itself was actually not so bad, Alan Davis on art and story. But I just had trouble getting past the physical characteristics of the cover. And with Clemson falling to Ohio State by many, many points in the college football playoffs, Luke owed me, let's just say, a good number of comics, including a book starring one of his faves, Hawkman 35 from the Palmiotti and Gray era. Good issue, the best part of which was a conversation between the Hawks and an Earth policeman. Argument, actually, was interesting, because ostensibly they're on the same side, but the heroes don't have to do the drudgery part of police work, paperwork, courtroom testifying, all that stuff. That was an interesting take. And X-Men Unlimited number 1 from 1993, and wow! Again, no doubt when this comic is from. It's 50 pages or so of Cyclops, Storm, and Professor X battling a major snowstorm and themselves, and their own weaknesses and character flaws and personal dramas. They're ambushed by Sienna Blaze and rescued by Bishop and Psylocke. I know that this series is considered to be filler or cashing in on the hype of the time, but I have to say this more or less actually kind of worked for me, because although it hit on various soap opera elements of the X people, it actually told a fairly exciting one-and-done story. And as little experience I have in the X world, that's really what I'm looking for. Luke also sent Fate 1 through 4, written by John Francis Moore, who I know is the writer for the first couple of years of Doom 2099. One similar thing he does in both these books is start some of the issues with a literary quote. Other than that, there's not a lot in common. This is a total 1990s revamp of the Dr. Fate concept, with the power of Nabu falling to Jared Stevens in the aftermath of Zero Hour. I have to say that in terms of Dr. Fate, I tend to be a traditionalist and prefer the old-school adventures featuring Kent Nelson in the gold helmet, or gold half-helmet. But having said that, these issues were definitely interesting. My buddy Kirk, aka Big Five Army, sent a care package a while back, including some of his wife's awesome fudge, and a few comics, such as Headlopper, number 4, the end of a Scandinavian-style adventure war miniseries. And it was adventurous. It was full of war and warriors. Solid read. And I read Justice League United, number 1, aka Justice League Canada, one of the stranger books from the New 52 era. I like Stargirl and Animal Man, but this take on Green Arrow, not so much. And the clunky version of Adam Strange's suit, not a fan of that either. It was vaguely interesting. Jeff Lemire is a professional comic book writer, but I'm not anticipating rushing out to the store or the app to follow up on this one anytime soon. I got a great haul from the 50-cent boxes at Pulp Reality recently, including The Savage Sword of Conan magazine 203, from November 1992. Now, often, if you're reading part two of a three-part story, that's a lot of waste of space, a waste of time, because not a lot is going to happen. But that was not the case with this one. It helps that it's a 40-page middle chapter of a Conan epic written by Roy Thomas. This was part of the Demon's Blood story and was excellent. We also had a 12-pager from early in Conan's life, also written by Thomas, of course. I try not to declare items as bargains if they are at the absurdly high price of 50 cents. But if you find any of these big Marvel magazines for, heck, I'll even go up to a buck, I'd recommend picking them up. They're consistently very good. And from the world's greatest comics Black Friday weekend sale, books that cost me, are you sitting down, 10 cents each. I read, well, one of the things I like about World's Greatest Comics is they have high standards for condition when it comes to their main bins. So you get some pretty good coverless or cover-stripped comics in the cheap bins. But if you're just reading, condition doesn't really matter. So I was able to pick up a coverless version of Giant Size Avengers number 5, a reprint of Avengers Annual number 1, from all the way back in 1964. So I got a 50-plus page issue from 50-plus years ago for one shiny dime. This one was a big epic featuring the Mandarin as the main bad guy, but he's also using as underlings folks like the Executioner, Swordsman, and the Living Laser. And it's the whole team of Avengers, and at the end, they decide to keep working as a big mega team, with everyone coming together at the same time. So I guess it's a historic story, and I suppose a pretty good one. And also, Valley of the Dinosaurs number 9, a Hanna-Barbera property that I was not familiar with, until reading an issue of the same title a few months ago, I mean. This wasn't great, and it probably doesn't help that I don't know the characters all that well, but it was a standard Charlton book from the mid-70s, for all the good and ill that that implies. And if I didn't mention this, it was a dime. And some kids' books that I read, a lot from Sir Rob Lance's care package, and also some from Sir Iowa's Joe, from Pulp Reality, and a few from Hoopla. I read a pretty good amount, actually. Jughead, 170, 177, 188, 192, and 237. Walt Disney's Donald Duck, 278. Archie's Girls, Betty and Veronica, 7, 15, 17, 18, 21, and 68, Star Mini Comics, Care Bears and Heathcliff, Richie Riches, 37 and 49, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, Junior Woodchuck, 7, 12, 47, and 49, and The Flintstones, 23. The Betty and Veronica books came right out of the 50s, even though the clear DNA of the characters was there back then. The issues looked different. The format of the issue was different as well. Had a lot of 1 and 3 page stories in addition to the traditional 5 pagers. Simpler jokes, simpler stories. Riverdale really not built out yet as a location, not much at school or the chocolate shop. I don't know if that stuff had been introduced. It probably had been, but maybe wasn't as common. Or maybe it was more common in the other books like Archie or Pepper Laugh. Not sure. Big Moose was actually introduced in one of these issues. But the main cast was almost always there, the core five, B&V, in Archie, Jug, and Reggie. These weren't always great stories, especially because there was phrasing and references and jokes that I just didn't get. The language was just so different. But interesting as artifacts, and cool to visit the Archie landscape of the 1950s. The mini-comics, Heathcliff and Care Bears, they came from the notorious JJG, Jeremiah, from the Claremont to Claremont podcast. And the Care Bears tend to not be my favorite, but that story wasn't bad. Neither was Heathcliff. In both cases, I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised. But it's really hard to beat the Junior Woodchucks. All right, time to take a break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about graphic novels, trade paperbacks, and long runs that I read in January.
Hi. Hi, I'm Ruth.
And I'm Darren of the Rad Adventures Network.
We're a married couple who enjoy great stories of all kinds, including adventures, mysteries, science fiction, and fantasy.
Please join us for a variety of podcasts focused on a range of pop culture topics.
Trekker Talk is about 23rd century bounty hunter Mercy St. Clair from the comic Trekker by writer and artist Ron Randall. It's a blend of classic sci-fi adventures and noir mysteries set in a retro future.
Xenozoic Xenophiles is about the comic Xenozoic Tales by writer and artist Mark Schultz. It's a post-apocalyptic adventure series filled with Cadillacs and dinosaurs.
Warlord Worlds covers the many comics of writer and artist Mike Grell, including The Warlord, John Sable, Green Arrow, and the Legion of Superheroes.
Sensational Sleuths, where we talk about favorite mystery novels, movies, and TV shows.
Fantastic Fantasies, where we share our favorite fantasy films and books.
And Amazing Adventures, where we discuss action-packed adventure stories.
Listen on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Or visit radadventuresnetwork.com to find all of our shows and links to our social media pages.
That's RAD, R-A-D, which is short for Ruth and Darren.
And we're back to talk about trades, long runs, and miniseries that I read last month. And you wouldn't think that I'd have much seasonal reading here in January. But I did manage to find one Inauguration Day-related comic. A biography of a person who did not quite make it to the presidency, but did run, back in 1964. From Dell Comics, I read Barry M. Goldwater, which I believe was sent in to me by Mike Peacock. Pretty standard biographical comic. I learned some things about Senator Goldwater, but overall, nothing terribly dramatic. I have a bunch of books here that Kirk Spencer sent me, all of them being Kickstarter books and rewards for projects that he's backed, which is one of his favorite ways of getting new books. So this selection included Bust 1 through 3, Dagger Dagger, Dead End Kids number 1, Going to the Chapel number 1, Lad, The Homecoming, Merrick, number 11, The Misadventures of Spring-Heeled Jack, number 2, Planet Comics, number 1, Sync, number 1, and Wailing Blade, number 1. And here are my thoughts on the top ones of those, such as Bust, which takes place in, of course, a post-apocalyptic world, and the USA has mostly turned into a wasteland run by warlords. But there is a semblance of government, and a bare-knuckled brawler gets a chance at leadership. Doesn't really go all that well. But that doesn't stop that American rebellious streak. It's a strange, strange story. Lots of characters, lots of drama, lots of dialogue. I mean, it was pretty good. Dagger Dagger was a 200-page anthology of short stories in a range of artistic styles. Mostly fantasy and SF stories, but not even limited to that. And some of those stories in there were, again, pretty good. Dead End Kids, written by Frank Gogol, coming out from Source Point Press, was not a bad first issue. You've got a bunch of outcasts, and the setting is in the cold north somewhere, and one of these outcast kids falls through the ice. But was it an accident? Or was it murder? Going to the Chapel from Action Lab was a solid first issue as well. A wedding is interrupted by a criminal gang, which was a dramatic setup, but we see at the end that there's more going on than just that. This one was intriguing, and one I'd definitely be interested in following up on. Merrick was a Victorian-era story based on the life of the famous Elephant Man, although not related to the stage play or the movie. This one took place at a circus, a classic locale for a comic book story, and had some strange circusy elements. Not my favorite of the batch, but it was interesting. Spring-Heeled Jack takes place in the same universe as Merrick, as the lead character of this book appeared in the Merrick book as well. But this one had a distinct lightness and just a sense of joy that the Merrick book lacked, especially with a more cartoony and colorful art style, and a silly story about a Victorian detective and do-gooder, Spring-Heeled Jack, who has springs in the heels of his boots. So this one was one of the more fun reads of this batch. Planet Comics number 1 was a good one, a sci-fi anthology in the spirit of the old comics from the 40s and 50s. It even had a reprint story from the original Planet Comics from actually back in that era. And even though a few of these were of the to-be-continued nature, which usually causes me to dislike anthologies, the stories themselves were very good, and it all very much met that intention of presenting old-school, old-fashioned sci-fi. Wailing Blade, number 1. Good dark fantasy, published by Comics Tribe. Good art and covers, along with a pretty good story of a tyrant and his executioner, or head taker. He and his wailing blade. In this issue, some folks gang up and try to kill the head taker. A plan that, spoilers, fails miserably. Thank you, Kirk, for that entire batch. And from the combination of Kirk and Pulp Reality, I read a couple of books featuring old-time newspaper cartoon characters. The original Dick Tracy number 1 from Gladstone, a collection of actual strips, newspaper strips from 1943, in which Tracy is attacked in a revenge plot by the vile Mrs. Pruneface, who, be honest, kind of ugly looking herself because all of the Tracy villains were kind of ugly looking. Drama, action, hardcore danger, and a valiant and skilled police detective. What more could you ask for? I really thought this was excellent and of its era in the best way possible. And then an updated take on a newspaper hero from Dynamite from 2015, Prince Valiant, number 1. There was some time jumping here, which made it a little confusing, but it was certainly an intriguing first issue. Asked questions that were interesting, laying the groundwork for what's to come and introducing a pretty interesting world. And from the 50-cent boxes at Pulp Reality, I picked up Will Eisner's The Spirit 1 through 3 from Kitchen Sink from 1997. These are short stories featuring the character from that era, or in some cases were references to past stories, I suppose. It's a very interesting experiment with work from Gaiman, Moore, Gibbons, and other excellent and talented creators. It was weird enough that it didn't really grab me. I have no idea if this version, if this take on the spirit was popular, but I see how some folk could really dig it. I just didn't totally get it. I also picked up Scout 2 and 3 from Eclipse Comics from 1985, Art and Story by Timothy Truman. It's the story of a U.S. vet, goes by the name of Scout, trying to make his way in, guess? That's right, a post-apocalyptic landscape. How did you know? At this point in the story, the military is after him, and some gang-related bad guys are too. So we have modern urban warfare in a very strange world, or strange version of our world. Enjoyable. And for what it's worth, when I met Tim Truman back a few years ago at the Baltimore Con, he was a super nice guy. And that helps. And I took the chance of digging into the adjectiveless era of Todd McFarlane's career, Spider-Man 6 through 10 and 12. There was a two-part Hobgoblin story with a lot of Ghost Rider thrown in. Spidey was pretty much a side character. I don't know. Maybe McFarlane wasn't actually comfortable with Spider-Man as his lead or only character, other than drawing him and his webbing in new and exciting ways. There was also a five-part story called Perceptions. I only had 4 of those 5 parts, but I was only missing the penultimate issue, which I imagine contained just a lot of running up and down corridors. In that story, Spidey is up in the Northwest, where a Bigfoot-like creature has been killing folks and he heads up there both for his civilian job and as Spidey. And Wolverine has some reasons to be there as well, although he's more concerned about the damage being done by the humans trying to stop Bigfoot, who have shot and killed tons of animals. So it's bold and bombastic, but as you might have heard, the stories weren't all that great. Jumping off from an issue that Luke Giaconetti sent me recently, I went to the DC app, ended up reading the entire 1991 run of Challengers of the Unknown 1 through 8. This is an interesting take on the team who just never have reached the levels of popularity that they had back in the Silver Age. This one takes place in a world where they've slowed their adventuring and have licensed out the name to many things, including Challenger's Mountain, a tourist attraction, a museum slash amusement park. But when the mountain explodes, the Challengers, or at least the surviving ones, try to solve it, figure out what happened. That sounds simple, but the book is so much more experimental and modern than that. This is from Loeb and Sale, I guess early in their career, certainly early in their careers as collaborators. And you see a lot of youthful energy, experimentation, and plot, and layout, and design. It's strange for sure. Not totally sure if I liked it, but I think I'm glad that I read it. And then taking some advice from Sir Luke, I read from Hoopla a bunch from a recent run of one of his favorite Marvel characters, Tony Stark Iron Man 1 through 19. This is written by Dan Slott and is pretty entertaining. We've got Tony as a Steve Jobs type, and the latest thing he's rolling out is a virtual reality environment, and we all know how that's going to go, right? Yes, it's a disaster, and the effects fall out into the real world, blah, blah, blah. There's actually a lot of good happening in those issues with characters like Jocasta, Janet Pym, Rhodey, Bethany Cabe, and Arno Stark, and a range of other side characters, which was great when they were not dealing with the VR plot point of the story. Although that was a great plot point to develop the theme, because at this point, Tony has been dead and brought back via an uploaded set of memories. So he's dealing with whether he is part of reality or part of the virtual world. And then also in the virtual world, he did a little drinking. He's trying to figure out if that has any consequences for himself and his recovery in the real world. After that, we move into the War of the Realms era, that tie-in, which Tony has to deal with magical stuff, which he doesn't like. Then he has to deal with issues relating to what is a robot and what is human. Again, some very good character stuff happening here, both for Tony and for those around him. And from the $3 for $1 bins, down at Carolina Comics and More, from back in March, when I could actually drive to visit my dad. I finished up a run from a licensed property I started a few years back, Forgotten Realms 14 through 25. There were a couple of good storylines in these issues that were all pretty good. Not great, but good, especially the ones drawn by Rags Morales. I liked the Cat People story best, those issues. Wasn't sure what to expect from this property, and the characters tended to be predictable, stereotypical. But I think that the title was about as good as it could have been, given the restrictions of being a game-based property. A shout-out does need to go to issue 24, which was presented as an inventory story, a fill-in, but in retrospect, was clearly, along with 25, a case of running out the clock until the title ended. Because it's epic fantasy, and you can't do a two-issue storyline. That's just not epic enough. So we get this issue, 24, the penultimate issue, in which the characters take us, quote, behind the scenes in the world of the realms. And we get some very metatextual stuff about the games and the books and different realms. And there's even a scene with the writers and artists of the comic book, trying to come up with crazy new ideas for the characters. Sometimes the self-aware, self-referential stuff does not appeal to me, but in this issue it came, well, first it came totally out of the blue, which was a surprise. And second, I think it was executed really well. And from the excellent used book, record, and comic store, Pulp Reality, I read Batman Tenses, books 1 and 2. This is from Joe Casey and Cully Hamner from 2003, and is a story from Batman's first year. He is waging his brand new one-man war on crime, while also trying to regain and retain control of the Wayne companies. I can get touchy about how business stuff gets portrayed in comics, but here, that stuff was pretty good, pretty reasonable, realistic. And as these two worlds come together in a former Wayne employee of the month, he gets laid off and begins a reign of terror. The killer has a terrible past, reminiscent too, but not identical to Bruce's. And he also has the power of visions of apocalyptic futures. And it's an interesting story. They use the extended page counts of these 64-page issues to pace the story really well. But I don't know that it drove home those thematic elements as well as it could have. You know, these were a little bit better than okay. Not a ton better than okay. A little bit better. And from Derek Crabb of the Fanholes, I read the end of a 1970s series, Karate Kid 14 and 15. In 14, he teams up with Robin after they fight for a bit. Of course, that was an enjoyable story. 15 is the last issue of the series, but they don't have time to wrap up the storyline and get him back to the Legion in the 30th century. But he does go to a different 30th century via time travel shenanigans. He ends up in the Commandy world. And I think I've actually read the Commandy issues that finally do wrap up the Karate Kid arc. Spoilers, he does get back to his correct 30th century, and he does get to marry Princess Projectra, which was the backstory of this entire 20th century sojourn. Lots of 70s weird stuff in here. But this entire series, I think, was actually a fun read more often than not. And from the combo of Half Price Books and Hoopla, I read Ex Machina Specials 1 through 4, all written by Brian K. Vaughan. This was the original two-part introduction to the character and the title, and then two other specials. All of these came out before the ongoing began. These gave us some of Mayor Mitchell Hundred's secret superpowered past. As the Great Machine, he battles his archenemy, Fersen. We then have a Halloween story that talks about the anti-mask law that was important in Hundred's history. And all of this takes place in a version of actual historical pre- and post-9/11 New York City, which is a bold, dramatic choice. And I think I don't mind it too much here. I think mostly it works. It takes it appropriately seriously. Pretty good stories. And I've got two that are not comics specifically from Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, but he sent these in, so I read them. And that's Doctor Who Magazine, The 11th Doctor, Specials, Issues 1 and 3. These are mostly detailed episode guides for the Matt Smith era, about 10 to 15 pages of text and pictures, lots and lots of pictures per episode. Very interesting. For my LCS's Black Friday dime sale, I picked up a book related to the Spider World featuring a character I knew from the excellent Spider-Man iOS game, and I liked it enough to search through Hoopla, so I ended up reading The Prowler 1 through 5 from the Clone Conspiracy storyline. I grew to like Hobie during the series, and I liked Julia Carpenter, who was in the last few issues. And it was a bit of a heartbreaker at the end. And for me, a heartbreaker can be a good thing in consuming fiction. More often than not, it really is. I didn't know a ton about the storyline, and the presence of clones in Spidey always makes me a little bit nervous. But I liked this series, and it was so good, I flipped back to earlier parts of the digital trade and also read more of the Clone Conspiracy, including Amazing Spider-Man 19 through 24, in which the Jackal has figured out how to reanimate the dead, and is using the New You company to do that. The series has a lot of Ben Reilly, revived after being turned to dust because comics. And we have Gwen and some Captain Stacy and Doc Ock as well. So lots of mad science stuff, along with the philosophical questions that arise from cloning. Interesting, and this wove in and out of the main event storyline, which I also read, Clone Conspiracy 1 through 5, and the Omega issue. Some intense bits with characters who were previously dead. There's Gwen Stacy here. There's actually two Gwen Stacys here. But one is the Spider-Gwen from another universe. The problem is that every dimension where this cloning thing has happened, it has led to disaster. An alternate Gwen is here to stop Spidey in this dimension. But a lot of his allies think this technology is pretty worthwhile, so of course he has conflicts with families and friends and allies. And at the end, he was probably right. But those relationships, those friends, those allies, they might not be ready to rekindle relationships and friendships. So a pretty intense series. That trade also included Silk 14 through 17. And I read some of the early Silk issues and really enjoyed the character and her backstory and her personality. At this point, JJJ has taken Cindy Moon under his wing, about the only person other than his family that he actually has any affection for. She heads out to the West Coast to check in on some of this clone drama and also get out away from her own family troubles. But what she finds out at the New You Corporation in terms of the clones and what exactly the company's been going on troubles her a lot. And JJJ's wife has been brought back, so he has a lot of conflicts to overcome. I think in each of these miniseries in this clone conspiracy arc, I think they dealt pretty well with the legitimate emotional aspects of the story. That seemed to be one of the things that they were keying on, and that really kind of pretty much worked for me. Also from Hoopla, I read a series that I read and enjoyed the free comic book day preview of earlier in the year, Blade Runner 2019, 1-12 from Titan Comics. This is the story of Ashina, she goes by Ash, and is the best Blade Runner ever. In this series, she gets involved in a kidnapping scheme that goes all the way to the top of the Trail Corporation and involves many powerful people who don't want her digging into this too far. But when she rescues the kidnapped girl, things get hairy, and she and the girl have to flee. From there, it gets complicated among both humans and replicants. Very enjoyable miniseries. There is a follow-up, Blade Runner 2029, that just got going as new issues. So maybe I'll get to that maybe later in the year when the trades hit Hoopla. And another series I continued via Hoopla was Star Trek New Visions 15 through 17. These are the John Byrne photo novels. And the stories in here were all pretty good. Most, if not all, were new stories, which was a change, an evolution from some of the earlier volumes, which contained a number of sequel stories to episodes from the original series. I like both, but I think I'm more impressed with the Photoshop skills when it includes the creation of new characters and new worlds and new concepts. This is just a very interesting experiment. I was fascinated by it. And more often than not, again, I think the individual stories, which all come in around 40-plus pages, I think more often than not, they work pretty well telling some pretty interesting stories. And as I was poking around the DC app, now rebranded as DC Universe Infinite, I noticed that they had added all the issues from a 70s fantasy series that always intrigued me. So I read Stalker 1 through 4 from the combined talents of Paul Levitz, Steve Ditko, and Wally Wood. And it was pretty good, the story of a young man who sells his soul for warrior prowess, which seems like a pretty good deal for him at first, but it turns out not so hot an idea after all. And you have a lot of great fantasy tropes here, mystical weapons and a corrupt royal family, dark magic. A hero who we're really rooting for. Very fun containing, as our friends at the Into the Weird podcast would say, some Bronze Age brilliance. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, Forgotten Realms 24, the behind-the-scenes issue, was memorable. All-Star Squadron 1 was an enjoyable revisit. I read two issues from Lee and Ditko's early Spider-Man. They have to be considered high-quality reads as well. Planet Comics number 1 was a fun throwback-style read as well. But in terms of what I thought was my favorite, well, this was kind of a throwback kind of month in a lot of ways. So I'm going all the way back to the 1940s, to that reprint collection from the newspaper strips, as presented in the original Dick Tracy number 1, favorite read of the month. If you have any questions or comments about any of these books, I'd love to hear from you. You can send that feedback via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com. Or as a comment on the Facebook or blog post for the episode, the blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek. And of course, the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. Thanks for listening, and keep the pages turning.